Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 56, and it's 5 wins in a row for the Steelers, Dave. It's 4 of those on the road, and yesterday's game against the Bengals, well, we got a lot to talk about. An interesting game, a game where the Steelers got dominated in the first half. As Mike Tomlin said, they kicked their own butts in the first half. And they turned around, and they dominated the Bengals. And as we've seen so many times, the Bengals imploded when it mattered most. And the Steelers have set up the Christmas Day matchup now with the Ravens and a chance to clinch the AFC North.
Yeah, the Bengals did a great job of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory in the second half. The Steelers, credit to the Steelers because they did play well, especially on the defensive side of the football. But, the offense had problems most of the game. You know, they can move it. They can move it down into Bengals territory, but self-inflicted wounds and whatever. They had to settle for 6 field goals throughout the day until finally punching it in late. And part of that, thanks to the Bengals having 4 straight penalties on 4 consecutive plays. That was where the meltdown was in full force right there. But yeah, a lot to talk about. It's sad to see so many people on Twitter early on with this team just totally throwing their hands up with a lot of football left to play. I think this team really showed a lot of moxie. And I think Mike Tomlin said after the game, he called it a gritty performance. And, like I said after the game, you got to take your hat off and hand it to him.
It was, Dave. And the thing I'll say about the offense is, I did think they played very well in the second half. Ben, we've talked about Ben's struggles sometimes against cover 2 and against his defense. He made the throws he had to make, and I'm going to give him so much credit for a 6-minute drive to end that game. We talk about the two-minute drill where you're trying to score late in the game and you're trying to get points. A 4-minute drill is when you're trying to run out the clock and finish things off, and I think the Steelers got the ball back with 5:56 or 5:53 left, basically 6 minutes left in the game. And they were able to go down the field. They converted a 3rd and 8. They get the big pass to Ladarius Green. They were able to do it without anybody having to stress about the other team having a ball and a chance to win like happened in the Dallas game. So that was really an impressive way to close it out. When the Bengals, they did that all with the Bengals having 3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning to stop the clock. So effectively, that's a lot more than 6 minutes a clock. They didn't have to punch it in. We can go through the play calls and whether you like the fact that they were aggressive, throwing on the very first play of the drive, throwing on 3rd down to AB in the end zone, trying to seal the deal on a 3rd and short. That was a bit surprising. But they did get it done, and now they've set themselves up where, they continue, as Tomlin said 5 weeks ago, we don't have to look outside our own stadium. We know what the deal is if we take care of business.
Yeah, as you stated, they got the ball back with 5:53 left. It ended up being, and don't forget that drive started at their own 16, too. A 13-play drive, their longest drive of the game. 59 yards was the distance that tied their longest drive of the game, which the other one of 59 yards, 11 plays, was right before halftime. And, boy, you want 7 there, but you're glad to see them at least get 3 and knowing that they're going to get the ball first in the second half. But back to that last drive. Yeah, 13 plays, 59 yards. Net yards, I think, were 75 because of 16 yards worth of penalties. 5 first downs on that. And the end of the game, I think, ended at the Bengals 8-yard line. Of course, the Bengals – you know, look, I mean, if they get the ball back in that situation, still a little bit of time to win that thing.
Right, and although you have to say, we talked about it going in, the Bengals only 4 fourth quarter touchdowns on the season, tied for the fewest, actually the fewest in the NFL now that the Bears had a couple in their game against Green Bay. So they finished the game with in the second half with you know, their second half drives were punt, interception, punt, punt. I think they had 38 total yards of offense in the second half. Just complete domination by the Steelers. And a lot of that, it goes to the offense as well, because the offense held the ball for out of the 30 minutes of the second half. The offense had it for 21. So, you know, just a complete turnaround. And just a question of, you know, we've seen this before. I think you guys wrote about it, Dave, a year ago. You know, in the same week, the Steelers fell way behind the Broncos at home, 27-13, I think, and had to come back from a 14-point deficit. This was a good comeback. And after the game, I kind of tweeted all the people who in the middle of the second quarter were tweeting me about how fire Butler, this team's terrible, they're never prepared. Here's my question for you, Dave. When we know the penalties were a huge deal in the first half. Do you look at penalty, face mask to step onto it, Artie Burns getting beat and then, you know, not using good technique to get the pass interference call, and Le'Veon Bell getting chop blocked. Do you look at any of those as being undisciplined plays or a reflection on the team being unprepared?
When I think of undisciplined, I think of maybe a guy like Marcus Gilbert pushing, getting a penalty that way, you know, pushing, who was it, perfect in the back.
Yeah, over to Castro, right.
Right, or any of those things that the Bengals like to do on the others. That's what I think about when I think about undisciplined. You know, you go back to the game against Dallas and the unfortunate face mask by Sean Davis in that game, and the other penalty in that game, Cockrell and the hit out of bounds. Even that, I don't really view. You know, it's those are bang bang play situations. So no, I you can teach that all you want, but you know, in game situations, spur of the moment, a to it hand to the face. Look, you're just trying to make a play, and it's not like you're. I think in the back of your mind, you're saying, oh no, I'm going to get the face mask here, or you know, I'm going to get a hold here. I just don't see it. My favorite one is. This team's playing uninspired.
Right. The other team's way more motivated.
Yeah. How in the heck? Where's the meter for that one? you know, it just some of these. We live in such a gut hot take instant reaction world, and to go back through my mentions are an absolute mess. Throughout that first half of that game. So
Right. And I just, you know, I tweeted him because look, it happens. You just go back to the losing streak and at 4-5 and just see what people say. I mean, look at Tomlin's record. Okay, so this isn't necessarily about Tomlin, but now it's 10 years. You know, no losing records. Another at least 9 win season that potentially could be 11. 5 game winning streak. The team's improving. I think in out of his 9 years now, if the Steelers win one of these last two games, or this will be his 10th year, he'll have at least 7 of those 10 years have gone 6-2 or better in the second half. I mean, that would suggest a team that improves over the course of the season. I also realize, and this is important to acknowledge, that a lot of the stuff that we get on our timeline is a visible vocal minority, and a small minority. Of Steeler fans. So I recognize that. It's just unfortunately for us, you know, we talk and we don't have people necessarily talking back to us when we do the podcast. We see stuff on Twitter and not everybody's on Twitter. I get that. And a lot of people, you know, their daily lives just don't afford them the time to do that kind of stuff. So I get it. But it's just, it's interesting to see. But to the game, you know, things didn't go the Steelers' way early. And I do think the Bengals came out with a ton of injury energy. And we're very fired up. And at the same time, I think that level of energy leads to their frustration and lack of discipline when things don't go their way. And they didn't. And you just saw a team that, Dave, I've been in Marvin Lewis's corner from the get-go that he shouldn't get fired because of a year like this, the 5 years straight in the playoffs or whatever it was, and a bunch of injuries this year. But you see stuff like that, and it it gives me pause to think that either he's got a clean house or he's gonna leave the house.
Let me ask you, this is one of those hypotheticals, so you're not Tomlin, so I'm going to ask you to deal with one here. If a player on the Steelers team was going through such a spell such as that, and I realize that, well, Burfict wouldn't be on the Steelers, how would Tomlin handle a situation?
Bench him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. And, you know, there comes a point in time, I think, where – and look, you know, we had Paul Denner on the other day saying that, you know, Burfict's been – I guess
exemplary citizen.
Yeah, it's so many words, a patron saint since the whole Patriots game thing. Well, that came to a crashing halt, didn't it?
Dave, let's just talking about that. Did Marvin Lewis make the Mike Mitchell Vontaze Burfict comparison after the game or over the course of the week?
I want to say. I'm not for sure, David.
I didn't see Mitchell's comments. So for those, I didn't see Lewis's comments after the game. But basically, Aditi Kinkabwala said, you know, was talking to Mike Mitchell after the game, and it apparently was relayed to him either during the week or after the game that he compared Burfict and Mitchell, and Mitchell went off and said, and by the way, I think Mitchell has grounds here. I don't think he had a ton of ground last year or prior, but I do think he has ground this year to say, you know, I've only had one 15-yard penalty. In the past 2 years, okay, that's true. Never been suspended for, you know, dirty play or anything like that. That's obviously true. I got in the interviews that I did with the Cincinnati media, anytime I brought up Burfict, the response was, well, you guys have guys like Harrison and Mitchell who play on the edge, and if they're on your team, you love them, and if they're on the other team, you hate them. There's some legitimacy to that, but Burfict is a different character. I mean, he is over the edge against the Steelers. He looks like he is purposely trying to injure guys continually, and I just think it's a different level. And it was interesting to hear Mitchell's reaction to it. And obviously, you know, a lot of guys put stuff behind them when they get off the field and they shake hands and all that stuff. I mean, there are plenty of guys in the Steelers locker room who genuinely hate Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, and you're right. If Vontaze was in a Steelers uniform once again, I'm sure there'd be a selection of the fan base defending him. Just like, you know, sort of with Harrison. Going back years ago and those hits by Harrison, I have some slanted, you know, some black and gold glasses here, but I never remember thinking of Harrison, those hits on Massaquoi and McCoy and who else did he plant and knock out? I never viewed those of him being malicious and really wanting it to intently hurt somebody. I don't think that's who he is. I just think that his aggressive nature. He just had to, and the way that, you know, the rules of the game changed, I think he just had to relearn how to hit, basically. And I never viewed it as him purposely trying to injure a player. Now, there are times you can go back through your tape with Burfict and think, oh, man, that guy's just out there trying to end somebody's career. I mean, just go back to earlier this year. Say what you will about that low hit on Martellus Bennett in that game against the Patriots of whether, well, he didn't know if the ball was going to be thrown that way, yada, yada. That purposely looked like an opportunity to take a knee out once and for all. And then the whole stepping on LeGarrette Blount, the ankle, and that kind of stuff. You know, and compare it to Sue too. You know, in Dominican Sue, how many times have we seen Harrison get up from the pile and twist an ankle or step on a player's hand or foot or ankle? We just haven't
never.
You know, we just haven't seen that stuff. So this is a loose cannon, and you know, it makes you wonder how much more looser that cannon got after him and DeCastro. Butted heads there.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the Steelers win this game either way, but certainly the Bengals helped, and you know, you see the stuff. I laughed at Jeremy Hill. You know, the towel thing, he used foul language, and, you know, I'm not afraid to say those words, but we just, you know, he basically said F y'all about the towel. And then he said my account got hacked, which I thought was pretty funny. He made the Google eyes at it and said my account got hacked. And I think he was joking about that and just trying to make light of him being dumb. But, the language that Drake Kirkpatrick used after the game, just kind of just basically saying, I played good. I played this. I don't give a shit, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's that kind of stuff, too. Is there nobody to kind of looking over somebody's shoulder and just saying, don't be an idiot? Because apparently there isn't. And that, to me, with this team happening again, you know, I really have to question whether I would want to bring Marvin Lewis back or bring back all these players. If just this, because they're not going to get over the hump. I mean, I feel like the game, what I saw yesterday tells me this team, they can come back, they can get, you know, they can be healthy for a whole season, but they're not going to get over the hump because they can't handle adversity.
As I tweeted after that Drake Kirkpatrick, there were a lot of I's in that. I.
Right, exactly. You did tweet that. That was great.
It's a culture, right? I mean, it's a locker room culture. Let's not forget where Marvin Lewis spent some time during his career, right?
Yeah.
I mean, does it all come from there? I mean, I think it starts with your leadership in your locker room, not just with the head coach.
Sure. Absolutely, it does.
I don't hate Marvin Lewis. In fact, I think Marvin Lewis is still a good defensive coordinator. I could possibly see, you know, down the road, who knows, Marvin Lewis maybe being back in Pittsburgh. Marvin Lewis knows what.
Lewis is going to retire after this job. He's mid 60s. He's not getting a job.
Okay. But, I mean, it just goes back to – and, look, to hear Marvin Lewis give press conferences and to hear him speak and everything outside of what happens on the field, I think he gets it. I don't think he's trying to handle the popcorn as best as he can there in Cincinnati. I just think it all stems from where are your core leaders in that locker room? Your older players on that team are who? Adam Jones and I don't have it.
The linemen on both sides.
You would think Whitworth would be a little bit better leader than what he is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to judge what happens in the locker room. I've never been in their locker room, so I don't have any idea, you know, how it goes individually in there. But I don't know what Pekka or Dunlap or Geno Atkins or Malaluga, I don't know what any of those guys are like.
Well, and I'm just judging by the comments that I read, the quotes, you know. That kind of thing. You would think a guy like Whitworth, instead of going out and semi-defending what Burfict does, he would be pointing more of a finger. The old saying goes, if you have one finger pointing elsewhere, then you have three pointing back at you, right?
Yes.
Let's roll down the list. Carlos Dansby is a 13-year veteran. Pekka is an 11-year guy. Whitworth, 11-year guy. Adam Jones, a 10-year guy. Eric Winston, of all guys. I mean, that's your guy on the NFLPA, right? Eric Winston, the tackle, 10-year guy. Wallace Gilbert, Pat, I mean, I could go down the list here. I think it's... And then you got a guy like Burfict, who is only in his fifth year, and it's pretty much, when you think of the Bengals, you think of Burfict, you know? So I think it's just a culture, and I think they need to, moving forward, I think the Bengals need to look at the top of the chain there and how it filters down from there. I think Marvin Lewis will be back for one more year at least.
I do think they'll bring him back because I don't think Mike Brown will fire him for a variety of reasons.
I mean, who are you going to replace him with?
Well, I mean, you know, we can go through the list, but the larger point being, I was 100% in his corner, and he lost a little support. I'm still probably in favor of bringing him back, but he lost a little support. Speaking of which, how about firing Gus Bradley as they're getting on the plane? You can't you wait the 2-hour flight to fire the guy? Fire a guy and then you get on a plane home?
Yeah, it makes for a long plane ride.
I'm not going to go over the game film. I'll have some scotch, though. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need this. What do they call it? I don't need this Surface effing tablet. Give me a goddamn limit.
Yeah, leave the bottle for sure.
All right, so let me ask you. We had I've never heard of this, Dave, and I'm guessing maybe you hadn't heard of it until yesterday either, because we run into some of the same circles. Chris Boswell kicks 6 field goals, and a guy calls up the post game, and he says, you know, we judge everything in football, stats, yards, all these things. He said, how about the fact that Chris Boswell kicked 262 yards of field goals in the game? Is that the most ever? And I said, I have never heard anybody even reference a stat like that, not once. Because, first of all, you have to have an unusual game like this to even think about it. And so I threw it out there to Elias Sports, and somebody came back to me with that somebody who kicked 7 last year kicked for 267 yards a field goal, so beat Boswell by 5. And if you just want to do the math on this, folks, Boswell 262 yards of field goals works out to 43 and two-thirds yards. That was his average field goal for 6 field goals yesterday. And then the apparently, if this record is true, that's averaging about 38 yards of field goal for 7 field goals. So he wasn't exactly kicking short ones either. But I'm guessing, Dave, that's probably second. I mean, do you think a guy has kicked at least 6 field goals and averaged 43 yards of field goal? Do you think that's ever been done other than by apparently Santos last year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a great point.
It's a crazy stat. Right?
My mind would never have thought to go that direction to figure out the total distance.
Me neither. So, I mean, obviously somebody thinking outside the box on field goal kickers.
Yeah, so that's a lot of math for a Monday. He was money, though, and he deserved that game ball after. That's semi elite.
Record book stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
And let's not forget maybe the most important play, because the field goals were all worth 3 and the tackle was worth 4. I mean, that was a hell of a tackle.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct there. He definitely played a part in the win and kept them hanging around. And that's what you want to do in games like that. Just hang around, get yourself close where you can get it to a one possession game. And I know it's frustrating to see the offense go down and continually shoot themselves in the foot, but would he have made those field goals at Heinz Field though? That's the question, you know.
What'd you make of the first one? I mean, he made it over the bar by an inch, right? Those 49 yards didn't go by much, but, you know, they count.
They count. They absolutely count. I guess we should talk a little bit more about this game. Why don't you give a shout-out to our sponsor, Craig Oxane, first?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, as you caught me by surprise here, let me just get my voice in shape here. Hey, Steelers Nation, you know that mortgage rates, they're pretty close to all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or just refinance, our buddy Craig Goxane at First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, he can help you out. He's a nationally recognized lender. He'd love the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. You can call him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. It's company NMLS 2501, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Let's talk. Where you want to start, on the offense or the defense?
Let's start offense first.
Okay, so Sammy Coates, and how many tweets did you get yesterday with 10 more minutes of Sammy Coates? Now, Sammy, 30 snaps. Had the Steelers' longest kickoff return since 2014, I think, or 13, I think it is, with Emmanuel Sanders. When he had this one was a 44-yarder, so nice job there. He made a catch, first one from Ben since the Jets game. It's only his second catch since then. But I have to say, Dave, I was a little disappointed on how he didn't fight for the football. And the one in the end zone we can talk about that bounced off his helmet that, you know, he did get a little bit face-masked. But the one down the right sideline with Drake Kirkpatrick, he can fight back through Dre, and he is absolutely going to get a flag, and he didn't do it.
I got blistered for kind of point, even though some balls underthrown going back to that game, what, against the Colts, right? Is that the one where...
Both sidelines.
Yeah, I got blistered for saying that, yes, I know the balls were underthrown by Roethlisberger, but I'd like to see Sammy Coates fight a little bit harder for the football. And it's
no doubt. There's no blistering on that. That's fact. He's got to fight right through. He's got to run into Dre Kirkpatrick and knock them both down.
Now, was it everybody in the comments and podcasts? No, but I mean, it was a large majority saying, man, get off his back. And then there's the section says, well, you need to get on Ben for underthrowing those balls. And if you get on Ben for underthrowing the balls, then it becomes,
oh, then you're really getting torched.
You hate Roethlisberger.
I got that in good form yesterday. He said, every throw he makes, you criticize him. Well, Jesse James is 6'7". You know, maybe he should have caught the ball, but he jumped. He's got his arms up. So that's at least 8 feet high. That's not a great throw.
you damned if you do, and you damned if you don't in this thing. But, I'd like to see him fight harder for the football. You can't just be a speed guy running. All of your catches can't be you being five yards past the defender, 40 yards down the field. That's not the way it works. That's called one trick pony, okay? He's got to become a better wide receiver all the way around. And until that happens, he's only going to be targeted four times a game, and he's going to only have one or two catches, and he's going to have the occasional 40-yard get behind, and Ben Roethlisberger drops it in the bucket. How many throws have we seen this year? How many catches this year? And we'll try not to spend too much time on this, folks. How many of these catches, and it's now, what, 22, 23 catches on the season? How many of those are what Mike Tomlin likes to call combative catches? Two?
Yeah, I'd have to think a little bit about it because I do think he got better at it right when he got hurt because he got criticized in that first half of the Jets game and came back, and I thought he made some plays in that game. But, you know, since Ben criticized him, he hasn't been a factor. And, first of all, I don't know why Ben's underthrowing him all the time. But obviously now, at least the word I've gotten from everybody who goes to practice on a daily basis is he's fine in practice. He can come back and catch balls. He obviously can catch kickoffs that are coming down at him. Maybe he can't put his hands up and they don't have him running the route where he's running a straight comeback or something like that. But, you know, he runs that out route or that comebacker to the sideline. You got to, you know, kind of have your hands positioned to catch the ball in that style.
If he can't do that, he shouldn't be out there, period. And he's out there and he's doing it in practice, evidently. And look, people are going to say, well, all you guys have been talking about is you want Sammy Coates back out on the field running deep routes, and now he's out there running deep routes, and now you want to criticize him. That's what we do, folks. I want Sammy Coates. All of this said, I still want Sammy Coates out there. And I still want him out there for 30 snaps. No disrespect to Kobe Hamilton. Look, Kobe Hamilton made another great clutch catch, and I talked about that last week on the podcast, and I've written about that. He has made some great key clutch third down receptions this year. He's done some good things as a blocker, but overall, over 30 snaps a game is what I want to see Sammy Coates out there, because he gives you the ability to stretch the football field, to keep defenses honest, on and on and on. So, I mean, it hurts nothing for us to say we still want to see Sammy Coates come down with a catch or two, a competitive catch, when and if Ben Roethlisberger underthrows him. Or at least draw a damn PI.
Right. And, you know, the Steelers, I think, going into that game had only drawn 6 or 7 pass interference penalties. And, you know, that's something that, you know, you'd think you'd be getting maybe one a game is too many, but you'd think you'd be getting close to more than one every other game. And so good to see a couple of those in that game. We can get to whether it was poorly officiated or not, but I want to get into some individual stuff. And Dave, again, able to work the middle of the field with Eli Rogers and Ladarius Green. And I just, you know, I feel like a broken record. I've been saying it since the preseason with Rogers and Green. And obviously they didn't get Green back till a month ago, but he has now become a force in the middle of the field. Yeah, I'm going to pat myself on the back for both these guys recognizing what they can do and how to do it. And it just if you do that, it opens up the outside. It opens up the running game. There are just so many things. And Ben didn't make many bad decisions in this game. Yeah, one ball got popped up and off Eli Rogers and could have been picked by Michael Johnson. That's not an easy play. But there weren't any obvious kind of dropped interceptions. And I just thought, you know, I didn't think he threw the ball perfectly in this game. But I thought he made good decisions, and I'm such a huge fan of using him in the middle of the field that I think that was obviously the key to the victory because they were able to do that in the second half.
Well, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, what those guys are and what you do with players such as that in the NFL. I mean, a slot receiver, typically works those quick outs and works kind of in the middle of the field, a la, you know, the Hines Ward and stuff like that. Same with Ladarius Green. I mean, that's why you brought Ladarius Green in, is to work, you know, mostly in between the numbers and occasionally run those Y crosses or those Y outs, you know, those flags, if you will, that kind of stuff. And he's doing that. The thing is, we haven't seen Rodgers do it on a because I mean he's running the routes. It's just the fact of him getting open,
getting the targets,
and getting the targets to go along with it. And a lot of that is, you know, look, I mean, Roethlisberger, you know, doesn't outside of a quick slant, which we saw a couple of nice ones of those yesterday. I think AB had one. I think Eli Rogers had one. I'm trying to remember if one of Ladarius, you know, unless it's a rhythmic kind of throw. When are you normally seeing, you know, you're usually seeing Ben kind of pat, you know, burp the baby a little bit on throws, deep throws down the middle of the field when it comes to players such as Rodgers and Green and AB and that kind of stuff. So, make no mistake, that's what Rodgers and Green's job is to do, is to work that middle area of the field.
And it's Ben's job to find him, and he did that. And I think he did it really well. And, you know, this is the fewest, I think, receptions for AB in about 4 or 5 years with Ben. But he did spread the ball around. What did you think of Dan Fouts' comment that, you know, in their prep for the game, they said to the other receivers, the young receivers, you're not going to get, you don't need to make a lot of catches. You're only going to get a couple opportunities, but make the most of it. I mean, it seems to me that that's just, there were some people saying, well, you know, that's pretty insightful. Well, the ball's thrown to you, catch it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care if you
you're not going to be first in targets. We got this guy Antonio Brown, so you're not going to get a ton of opportunities. Make the most of them. I mean, that's the story of life, right?
Well, and then, you know, we've seen the Steelers in the past lose some games when they've had to go away and target other players, and not been on the same page with them. You know, Marcus Wheaton, unfortunately, is a perfect example of that. Emmanuel Sanders during his time with the Steelers was a perfect example of that. There's times where Ben needs to spread the football around other directions other than players named AB and Le'Veon Bell in the passing game. And those players, when the football is thrown to them, if they're good passes, have to make plays. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of frustrating with Coates. It's becoming a little frustrating at times with Jesse James, I think. Those two players, for sure. And then, you know, at times Eli Rogers, there's been, you know, a time or two maybe where Eli should have had one. So I think having Green back, Green is, he's had a drop or two along the way, but you know, when you get in those instances such as yesterday where teams know how to take away Antonio Brown and make those make targets his direction tough, you've got to have the other players step up and make those plays. And I think that was the big difference really in that game. I mean, Eli Rogers, 5 catches, 75 yards, Green. And don't forget when a couple of those catches took place at key points in the game. And Green really had a key one late, you know, as well. He finished with 5 for 72, and then you had Bell chipping in 5 for 38. It sure didn't feel like Le'Veon Bell had 130 total yards from scrimmage, did it?
Did not, and you know, a lot of that obviously came late. he was not effective running the ball in the first half, and that gets to the O-line. Again, a good job, only one sack for 1 yard on a play where they were trying to run a screen and it didn't develop, and so Ben kind of just tried to dive back to the line of scrimmage. But they did a good job in that respect. I mean, too many penalties. And Dave, of course, we'll learn something about – now, make sure we distinguish here between Pro Bowl and All-Pro. We'll learn something about All-Pro voting this year in terms of what reputation gets you, because David DeCastro hasn't had a bad season, but he has certainly not had an All-Pro season. He was first-team All-Pro last year, which is the highest honor you can get in football. And if he's voted All-Pro this year, it will be surprising. Again, you know, not his best day. And, you know, he's had three or four games this year, which not your best day, which, hey, that might be enough to get you to the Pro Bowl, but that shouldn't be enough to get you to All-Pro. I thought the line was good, not great. But, you know, the Bengals did stack the box. I mean, Hubbard had some trouble standing. What they were doing is they were putting Marcus Hunt over him, and he kind of had his way with him a little bit. Hunt's, you know, 6'9", 295, and he had his way with Hubbard. So we saw Rosie Nix get stood up a few times. DeCastro, when he pulled, got cut by Perfect once, and a couple other times pulling guards couldn't get out there. So the Steelers had a little bit more trouble in the run game. I'd just give the offensive line, you know, a passing grade, not much more than that.
I thought they played okay overall. They weren't elite. No, Marcus Gilbert and DeCastro did a fine job of handling some twists and stunts over on that side. Let me ask you this: you know, when you talk about opposing teams' pass rush, how many times did you hear the ends for the Bengals, their name called during?
Yeah, nothing. Johnson and Dunlop were non-factors.
You know, and when you look at it that way, then you got to say, well, you know, Villanueva and Gilbert, fine jobs there. Was it dominating? Was it where you go, man, I mean, just open it up holes, for trucks in this game? No, it wasn't that at all. But I thought it was more than just a passing game. And back to DeCastro, man, what does he have, 13 penalties on the season now? And I think he's one.
And how many declined? Four or five at least declined.
And him and Artie Burns, I think, are battling for the team lead here this year. And make no mistake, I think Geno Atkins is always going to be kryptonite for a guy like DeCastro. There are a few times where I thought DeCastro got worked over pretty well. I'm trying to pull up this penalty report real quick here. DeCastro. Now I'm trying to think that they have count and then declined. And then yards. It looks like 14 count, 3 decline, 77 yards, 43 nullified yards for DeCastro. So his penalties resulted in 43. You want to talk about hidden yardage? That's,
yeah, no, that's a good one.
Here's the thing, though. Eight stalled drives, blame for DeCastro.
DeCastro.
Eight, yes, sir.
Oh, is that whose stat is that?
That's an NFL. That's a NFL stat, David.
Wow, NFL playbook stat. What's the rest of the team? Do they give anybody else? Is anybody else remotely close?
Let's see here. Marcus Gilbert, 4 stalled drives. Villanueva, 3 stalled drives. Antonio Brown, 1. Le'Veon Bell, 3 stalled drives. Not hard to remember.
One's fresh in my mind. And I'll tell you, another one was the false start on 2nd and 1 against the Browns at the 9.
Yeah, that moving that forward, yeah. Let's see. I'll roll through these. Sammy Coates, 1 stalled drive. Jesse James, 1. Hubbard, 2. David Johnson, 2. Xavier Grimble, 1. Ladarius Green, 1. Marquise Pouncey, 1. Darius Hayward-Bey, 1. Ben Roethlisberger, 1.
I wonder if that's Ben gets credit for something like a fumble or something like that.
No, these are all in your penalty stats.
So what's Ben getting one for, you know?
I'll tell you in just a minute. Delay a game.
Oh, okay. Good. That's good. And you should write an article about that. That's we don't talk about that stat. That's a good one. Right. If you have time this week, I'd love to see an article on that. Just kind of if there's any historical stuff to reference as well.
While I got it open here, let me go back to stalled drives last year. Cody won.
14.
Why didn't I know that right off the top of my head? Shame on me and my old man memory. 13 penalties last year, 2 declined, 110 yards. At least he didn't have as many nullified as DeCastro this year. 33 nullified, 7 stalled drives last year.
So DeCastro's already passed him at 8.
Yeah, and let's flip back to 2014 real quick. Stalled drive leader, boy, not a bad job in 2004. Marquise Pouncey led the team in stalled drives with 3.
Wow. So I don't know if that's an easy stat to sort, or you'd have to go through all 32 teams. I wonder. I would not surprise me if David DeCastro is leading the league in that stat. That would. I mean, 8 is a lot. That's almost, one every 2/3 of the games basically right now. So be interested to see that. All right, let's get over to the other side of the ball. Basically on offense, the guys who played, we talked about the snaps. Coach 30, Kobe 18. I threw up there on the pass-catching stats, snaps, kind of what things look like. Pretty much as expected. We did see Xavier Grimble get in there and make a catch, which was, he hadn't been involved lately. But it was Eli Rogers played 48, Jesse James 29, and Hamilton 18. And what was Grimble, Dave, about 10? Something like that.
Yeah, 8 or 10 or something like that. It wasn't very high. And one thing that we don't see in a snap count, so it'll show up in our charting, is when those snaps happen. How many of those do you remember coming after Grimble left?
After Green left?
I mean, after Green left.
Yeah, don't know. I was prepping for the show there, and I wasn't necessarily looking at exactly who was on the field. I was just checking to see if they're getting the first downs. But I will go back and look at that. I'm guessing probably 3 or 4 of them, right?
At least, yeah. And Russell Okung has 7 stalled. I'm trying to thumb through these while I talk to you. Russell Okung has 7 stalled drives for the Broncos so far this season. So DeCastro has him beat. The heck with this offense stuff. Let's talk about some defense.
Okay, so defense, the thing early was, okay, we haven't mentioned any of the injuries. So Darius Green's in concussion protocol, which, that could mean he misses 2 weeks like Shamarco Thomas. It could mean he doesn't miss a practice like B.J. Finney. So it would just be rank speculation, so we'll pass on that. Ricardo Matthews came back from the ankle injury. Good sign there. Maybe he misses a day or two, but you wouldn't expect him to miss a game if he could come back. Obviously, the big one, Stephon Tuitt, and I imagine he went in and they, maybe felt something was loose in the knee. Have the MRI either last night after they got home or this morning. And, the best worst case scenario would be Ben Roethlisberger's situation where he misses a game or two. And if the Steelers were, if he were to miss the Ravens game, you would think if the Steelers were to win that game, you'd think they'd hold him out of the Cleveland game. So, he'd be back for the playoffs. Obviously, worst case is he has something more significant with that knee and, obviously it could be a season-ending injury. You never know. The fact that he was walking around on it, that he wasn't immobile, he was standing on the sideline, he was sitting around, which suggests it's on the less severe than more severe side, but I'm not going to play Dr. David Chow and give you more than that. We'll just wait and see, and we'll find out on Tuesday, right, Dave?
Yeah, and Melanie, though, our resident, sure. our resident Steelers Depot surgeon. How blessed are we to have someone with her background and knowledge and all? She I put up a GIF or GIF. I'm gonna start saying GIF or GIF every time. That way I don't offend.
You're covered.
Yeah, I'm covered. I posted that on my Twitter feed, showing him kind of twisting what looked like his right knee on that early sack. And Melanie posted on Twitter, makes me wonder about an MCL sprain. And she,
right.
She goes on to say that, that would be the best case, the best case scenario, actually. So, we'll learn more about this, I think, on Tuesday. She's been pretty close on the money. You know, I think with several of these, you know, diagnoses, not only Steelers players, but, you'll see this, you know, whatever happens in other games, nationally televised games as well, too. So, and look, just keep your fingers crossed on this. Just remember that last year when Tua injured his knee in the game against the Arizona Cardinals, he missed the next two games. As a result of that. So is this the same knee? I forgot to look to see if it is the same knee. I think after the game was over, I think Daniel McCullers is, Dr. Daniel McCullers was stated as saying he doesn't think it's too serious. Tua didn't talk to the media. So who knows? The good thing is, you know, he wasn't evidently wearing a brace or using crutches. However, he was walking with a limp.
Okay, there you go. And yeah, if I were betting, I'd say sprained knee. I think that's probably, you know, and that could be a 1-2. You know, you'd think it probably not much more than a 2-3 week injury, but we'll get a better idea tomorrow. And I'm sure Tomlin won't give us much of an answer tomorrow either. So,
and if you look, shout out to Melanie. Make sure you follow her on Twitter @GirlSurgeon. It's very easy. Make sure you follow her.
Okay, so. The thing that concerned me in this game defensively, and how about the stat, Dave? It's a great stat that the Steelers are 9-0 when giving up 20 points or less, and 0-5 when giving up 21 or more. The Bengals obviously had 20 with about 3 minutes to go in the first half, so they got shut out in the second half. The thing that concerned me is that the Steelers have been very good at shutting down the run, and in the first half, Jeremy Hill was able to run right up the gut, and Burkhead went up the gut a couple times, and they couldn't stuff the middle. And, you know, some of that, of course, is Stephon Tuitt, but it was just more they were getting manhandled there at the line of scrimmage and, you know, closed down Shazier a couple times. The Steelers sometimes playing with just two defensive linemen, so that would be a look that the Bengals would want to check into a running play. So some credit to them for what they did. But that just changed so dramatically from the point basically they scored the touchdown, and I just put a tweet out. And obviously Jeremy Hill got hurt, and we can talk about the terrible Tau karma and all of that. But after his touchdown, which was, you remember they scored one more time with the field goal after the long kickoff return. But the rest of the game, he had 4 yards, minus 3 yards, 1 yard, 2 yards, minus 1 yard, minus 4 yards, 6 carries for minus 1 yard the rest of the way. Burkhead didn't do much more than that the rest of the way. So they were able to clog down the run game. And then if you're making Andy Dalton throw, you don't have A.J. Green. Somebody decided finally to cover Brandon LaFell, and their offense went away.
You know, the thing is, when you go back and you look at the first half stats for the Bengals rushing game, you see, man, it felt like more than 68 yards on 21 carries. If you work out, do the math real quick. What's the average yards per?
Yeah, it's three yards a carry almost exactly.
Right. Okay. Now here's the reasoning. How many of those plays were short distance?
Three at the goal line. They got nothing, and one more. They got one.
Right. So you take those out. You know, and then it just felt like they were running better, and they did at times. But I think the key thing was, and I wrote about this pregame as well too. About the chunk runs, and the Bengals, and not letting them, you know, have those 10, 12 yarders. Well, it looks like, if memory serves me, I think Burke had 1 for 10 in the first half, and then Hill had 1 for 12. Outside of that. They gorged, but they didn't gorge, right? Or gouge, you know? It just seems like we remember those, five plays that constituted nearly 68 yards of that rushing, right? Is it me? I mean, because, you know, it just felt like they ran better than what they actually did.
Yeah, and they moved the ball against the Steelers. And look, penalties were a big part of it, no question. But the Steelers were able to plug the gaps, and it was interesting, Dave. LT Walton, his play in Buffalo obviously earned him a much more prominent role in this one, as he got the start at left end when the Steelers came out, and the Tua was at right end, and they had Hargrave playing the nose. Obviously, they had to shift things around as time went on, and we'll see if Keshawn Lyons comes up from the practice squad and what are the things the Steelers need to do to make sure they have a healthy quotient of defensive linemen. But the two guys I want to highlight it on the defensive side are Ryan Shazier, as usual, and Bud Dupree. And I should put Lawrence Timmons in there as well. Timmons, you want football. Jeremy Hill and Lawrence Timmons at the goal line was the epitome of just physical, hard-nosed, you know, warrior-type stuff. Let's see who wins mano a mano. I mean, he just stopped him one-on-one at the goal line. Timmons didn't get credit on the television broadcast, but he's the one who stopped him also from going over the top with help from Shazier, and he also made the great interception. But just the speed and disruptiveness of Shazier first and Dupree second is really impressive. And Dalton's elusiveness was good. I think it saved him. You know, if it were Flacco or if it were some other guys, it would be 3 or 4 or 5 sacks in that game. Dalton did a nice job of rolling to his right and throwing balls away or even picking guys on that sideline. So Dupree maybe had to do a little better job and contain. But, I know we haven't seen exactly eye to eye on this, Dave, but I think he is a really disruptive guy in there with his speed and his ability to run things down.
Who's that?
Dupree.
Yeah, look, you just want to see more. You just want to see more from him as a pass rusher, David.
Yeah, for sure. I do think he's disruptive.
As an edge rusher, disruptive?
I just thought in the whole game he was disruptive. I think he's making Dalton roll out of the pocket a bunch of times. I'm impressed with what we're seeing from him based on last year. I expected him to contribute and be better than the guys we've seen, but I think he's been clearly better.
Here's my thoughts about where you might have seen that disruption yesterday. It seemed like the Steelers with the 4-man rush in the first half of that game, most notably, they did a good job as a group constricting the pocket on a few of those. It was Dupree twisting inside with, I think, right. Hargrave twisting to the outside. Okay. I still want to see more bend from him around the edge. I want to see more bull rush from him. I want to see more counters from him. I personally did not come away from that game thinking that Dupree was a disruptive player.
Fair enough.
Was it an awful game? No, because I think there were points where he provided nice chase. Okay, he did the same thing in the game against the Bills. Look, I don't hate the guy for having 2 sacks after 6 seconds, right? I mean, somebody's got to get the quarterback, right. Quarterback down on the ground. Look, long sacks just didn't start. Snap to sack big times did not start before Dupree hit the field. And I'm sure I'm going to get up. Boy, you sure do hate Bud Dupree. Look, I don't hate Bud Dupree, the selection of Bud Dupree, half as much as I hated Jarvis Jones back when that happened. There are things at times to be excited about with Dupree. At the same time, I don't view him as disruptive of a player as you do, and I'll leave it at that. I mean,
I'm sure we agree on Shazier. And the only thing, he gets a pass on this for me, but one of the things you'd like to see is when he shoots those gaps in his right, you'd like to see him wrap up every time. And I feel like it only happens 50% of the time, and I don't know what the right number is because obviously – when he's doing that, more often than not, he's also somewhat blowing up the play because somebody's reaching or turning to try and get to him and therefore not focusing on somebody else. So he's generally blowing up the play, but you'd like to see those, I think there was actually a 3-yard gain that would have been a 3-yard loss. You just like to see that more often because those are drive killers. You want to kill a drive, have a running play where, and the Steelers did that. There were, I don't know how many tackles for loss, they had 5 or 6 probably in that game. Guys stuffed running plays. And so, Shazier, I'm going to say it again. This is now the first time in his career he started and finished 7 straight games. And it's basically 8 straight games now he's played the whole game. If he won't be all pro this year, but obviously should be a Pro Bowl player for the first time. And again, he's going to be a defensive player of the year type guy you know, if this defense continues to grow, he is going to be the showcase guy in that defense.
He's earning, and it's going to happen. It's not like it's not going to happen, but it was fun to debate earlier in the year whether or not his fifth-year option is going to get picked up after the season. As long as he stays on this field, I mean, we've talked about it several times. He's as explosive as a playmaker as they come. Sometimes, and I thought that same thing on that missed tackle early as well, too. Sometimes his own speed and ability to shoot those gaps works against him. It seems because sometimes he's coming through out of control, and then the running back did a good job of sidestepping him, and then that goes for 3, 4, 5 yards, and then you go back into bad field. He's not above making mistakes still. You go back and look at that play late in the first half of against the Bills where he misdiagnosed and he filled the wrong gap, and boom. 20 something yards later than the running backs down the field there. So, you just got to be more technically sound. About Timmons, I've always said Timmons can play downhill. He is far from done. I think Timmons is going to be back some way, shape, or form. And, he didn't get the extension that I thought he would get this past offseason. But I think Timmons is going to be back in 2017. I think he's still got a lot of football left in him.
I'll just throw him into that as, same thing I've been saying all along. He's doing a great job attacking the line of scrimmage. Dave, he may have the best hands on the defense right now. I mean, there's nobody who goes up over their head and catches the ball better than Timmons. Of his 12 or 13 career interceptions, I swear that must be at least half of them are balls over his head. He's just really sure-handed on those. And that was a terrible throw by Dalton. And I don't know what Bodine, the center, was doing, 8 yards down the field. They should have thrown a flag on that. That was a big mistake by the refs, one of many. But it was a really good play. And, yeah, he was, again, attacking the line of scrimmage and then dropping and making those types of plays impressive.
Yeah.
But I think it'll all come down to, does he want to play for $4 or $5 million on a year-to-year deal like Harrison?
Yeah, and he might not even get that much. It might be down in the $3 million range now. Artie Burns, outside of the penalty, I thought Artie played a good game. I thought Sean Davis, Sean Davis really is playing well downhill right now. And by downhill, I mean against the run fills, blitzing. Really is blitzing, coming off that edge well, on top of it. You're not having to see him make plays so much, in a deep, too deep situation there. But I think he's playing well. And look, I have complained a lot about Daniel McCullers over the years. So I thought there were some meaningful snaps played by Daniel McCullers in this game against the Bengals. Look, you can point to the one where he was double teamed and on the touchdown there. The other teams played to make plays as well too. I thought that was perfectly blocked on Timmons, on Shazier, on McCullers on that play. But I thought there was another two, maybe three plays that McCullers played very well. So more than anything, hat tip to the way this defensive line really handled the next man up, if you will, after losing to it. Because quite honestly, there was a point in that first half where I'm thinking, oh Lord, I mean, this is going to be 160 yards on the ground, and why would you even throw the football moving forward? But they shored that thing up, as Mike Tomlin pointed out. Only three penalties. But boy, those three penalties in the first half of that, first half of that football game were just absolutely brutal, and props to Mike Tomlin to settle that group down. And yes, they went on to have a lot more penalties in the game, but how many of those were defensive penalties?
Yeah, they're mostly offensive penalties. And I'm with you. Mitchell, good job again. Ross Cockrell, a big third down pass breakup in front of LaFell. On that left sideline, they shut him down. They needed to shut him down. They shut him down. Okay, let's get into a couple things. One is we talked about Boswell and the special teams making the tackle. Coverage units have not been all that good the last 6 weeks. They've got to get better. Let's talk about the decision making from the coach's side. Did you like the look? They were successful on that 6 minute drive to end the game, and I give them a ton of credit. Did you like the play selection there where they were aggressive with it and throwing the football, like the very first play of the drive? The third and eight, I think you got to throw the ball, so no problem there. But then the throw to Antonio Brown down the sideline, which, you know, might have, if there's no call there, which it didn't have to be a call there, then you're in a situation where you're kicking a field goal. Do you like those calls?
You're talking about the first, what, the first play of that ending drive, the pass to Bell over the middle?
Yes.
So yep. you're not a fan of that? You weren't a fan of that one? I mean,
I am, and I'm just asking if you are. I said, look, they were really aggressive. The one that I would question would have been the last one to Antonio Brown on third and short. But I like the fact that they were aggressive and mixing up the plays, because you know the Bengals were going to sell out to stop the run. So I liked it. I don't know that at the moment, I really didn't expect them to throw the football. So I wasn't even thinking run pass option on that pass to AB where they called PI. That's the only one I would have questioned just for clock purposes.
I think the most questionable one of that, really, it was slap dab middle in the middle of that drive after Green made that big catch right at the Cincinnati 43, first and 10.
They dump it off to Bell and he drops the screen.
No. Was it the next play over the middle to Eli Rogers for 9?
Oh, right. Yep. They did. That was the next play.
But that was the quick slant, was it not?
Yeah, it was a very quick hitter. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you can maybe question.
And then where was the pass that Le'Veon dropped? When did that come? Or that was Ben underthrew it, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank. When that one was, David. I think it was a drive ahead of that. I'm not sure.
No, well, he's going to dive for that ball because that's 40 seconds, and you know he's looking at perfect. I get it, wasn't a good throw, just like you know. And so, okay, so
all right, so after the 2 minute warning, I guess is really your question there. The incomplete deep right to Antonio Brown. Look, I mean, you got the coverage you were looking for there, right? I mean, it's a second and 11. You're down in. Can you do that because you think you're guaranteed a field goal at that point if you need it? I mean, does it even matter?
Yeah, just whatever you think of block field goals, return for touchdowns. I mean, you know, how much do you live in your fears, right?
Right.
Let me ask you. The thing that killed me is, and I just thought they butchered it terribly in the first half. You're down 14 points. You're playing as slow as possible. You get a penalty on the first play. I realize – you know, the situation. What's interesting, Dave, is they had almost the same type of situation in terms of where they were starting a drive late in the fourth quarter and late in the first half, in the second quarter. And they were really aggressive in the fourth quarter to end the game, but they weren't nearly as aggressive in the first half to try and get points when they're down 14. I realize they're getting the second half kickoff, but when they came out of the 2 minute warning, it took them 33 seconds or 27 seconds to run the second play out of the 2 minute warning. And basically they ran out of time. They didn't kick a field goal because they had to kick a field goal. They kicked a field goal because they spiked the football. They went into the halftime with one timeout. They ran out of time. They didn't manage it well because they don't play fast enough. And that was killing me. And it was brutal clock management there at the end of the first half.
Well, the biggest thing I wanted out of that drive was some sort of points for sure, especially because you have back-to-back possessions in there. Now, obviously you want both those to end in touchdowns. They didn't. And if one ends in field goal, you'd like the other one to end in touchdown. But both of them ended in field goals. But at least they went points to points back to back, even though it was field goals in situations there. 2-point conversion decision.
I know a lot of people are fired up about this one, and I understand why, and I would probably lean that way. And you know, the other thing that second guessers are king here is Steelers have all of a sudden can't convert a 2-pointer for their lives. I mean, after hitting the first two of the year, what did they miss, 6 in a row now or 6 of 7 or something? It'd be nice to see them convert one. What did you think?
Well, I mean, I guess being up five is being up, Being up five, how much different is that than being up six? I think the thought was being up five
is the Bengals get the touchdown. And so the thought is if they don't convert, a field goal wins the game. And if they do convert, a field goal ties the game. If you're up five, if you're up six, well, they get a touchdown. They're not going for two. They're just kicking the extra point. And so a field goal wins you the game. So I think that was the logic behind they shouldn't have gone for two. Because if you're up six, the Bengals get a touchdown. You can win the game with a field goal. If you're up five, the Bengals get a touchdown. They go for two. The best you can do is tie if they convert the two. There are a lot of ifs in there. But I think that's the logic behind it.
You think that was more of a chart call than it was a
I think it is more of a chart call. Obviously, Mike Tomlin's, you know, living on his gut. So
yeah, it'd be interesting if he admits to that being a chart call, because I think you're right. I think when you dissect it, it might be a chart call. Have you ever seen that chart?
I think it's not a chart call on the math. I think it's but I don't think Mike's looking at the chart. I don't think he looked at it.
Yeah.
I really honestly don't think he looks at it.
All right. We've run a little bit long here. We covered the injuries, right?
We didn't cover playoff scenarios at all. I can't find a way. Somebody told me there is a way that the Steelers could be the 4 seed. But I promise you, they can be the 2 seed. They can be unlikely the 2 seed, but they can be the 2 seed. They can be the 3 seed. That's the most likely if they win. They can be the 5 seed. No, they can be the 5 seed. They can be the 6 seed, and they can miss the playoffs. So there's just about every scenario going. A lot of these games are going to get played. Dave, the schedule next week is Saturday, right?
Most of the games on Saturday, two on Sunday, right?
Right. Yeah, the Steelers for sure. But so the Steelers are going to know a lot. So the teams people should be rooting for in Pittsburgh are Buffalo beating Miami, which is in Buffalo, certainly possible. And how about that? You know, the Bills finish with Buffalo, and then they with Miami, and then they finish with the Jets. They could certainly finish 9-7, and people want to fire Rex. I don't really get it, but let's see what they do with Miami. That's a huge game for the Steelers. The games in the West matter a little bit. If the Chargers had beaten the Raiders, that would have been a big help for the Steelers being the 2 seed. So now that's unlikely. But if the Raiders lose twice and the Chiefs win the division, then the Steelers win the head-to-head with the Chiefs if the Steelers win out. So that's how they get to the 2 seed. You don't need to know how they get out of the playoffs. They lose twice, they're out of the playoffs, possibly. That's not a guarantee, because also the Ravens finish at the Bengals with A.J. Green back. So, also, you know, I think I covered most of the games that matter, but you get a sense of it.
Right. Just when you think you have all these probabilities mapped out, you go do one of those playoff scenario things, and somebody – somebody inevitably finds one. Well, you forgot about this scenario here.
Right.
Here's the thing. Just win out. Just win out. And everything will just – or more importantly, just win Christmas night, and you know you're in, and then we can talk about – look, you're going to need Oakland to lose twice in the next 2 weeks to get that number two. Not impossible, but unlikely. But more than anything, you want to have at least that first home game in the playoffs. I don't know. Maybe we should be rooting for Miami, because I would really like Miami to come to Pittsburgh if Steelers have to be in one of those two wild card games. Go ahead and give our boy Craig a call, and let's get out of here.
Yeah. Hey, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let Craig guide you through the sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Baltimore. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender, can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And we'll have the Tomlin, you know, we'll recap Tomlin. We'll have our buddy John Eisenberg with us on Wednesday. We got a lot going on. We'll get through these playoff scenarios, some of the other things going on, a lot to cover.
It's a great day to be alive, David. Folks can
maybe our longest podcast ever. Sorry about that.
No, it's not even close, but we're getting there. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the Terrible Podcast at Terrible Podcast on Twitter. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. A few donations lately during the holiday season. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for that. Thank you for your support for the show. Listenership is up there right where it needs to be. We appreciate everybody tuning in as well on that. If you want to donate to the show, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button on the right upper navigational bar. Happy holidays to everybody. We'll a few more shows here before Christmas. David, have a great day, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.